degrees at 10:06.
I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Welcome to Radio Times. Earlier this month, the Pennsylvania Attorney General criminally charged five Philadelphia educators, a principal, and four teachers for allegedly cheating on state standardized tests over a five-year period at Cayuga Elementary School. The charges involve tampering with public records, perjury, and criminal conspiracy. This is the latest development involving a number of investigations into allegations of cheating in Pennsylvania schools. And here to discuss these allegations and the ongoing probes are two longtime education reporters. Kristen Graham covers education for the Philadelphia Inquirer, writes the paper's Philly Schools Files blog, and she won a Pulitzer Prize in 2012 for her education reporting. And Kristen, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me, Marty.
You're welcome. And also with us is Adele Mezzacapa. She's been reporting on education since 1986, a lot of that time with the Philadelphia Inquirer. She's currently contributing editor at the Philadelphia Public School Notebook, which partners with WHYY, celebrating its 20th anniversary. And Adele Mezzacapa, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times as well.
Thanks for having me.
Kristen, let me begin with you. Because we're talking, I do want to begin by talking about this probe by the Attorney General, but this is just one of a number of investigations into Pennsylvania schools.
Absolutely. So there are there were 53 Philadelphia school district schools that were under investigation for cheating, and three charter schools. And there are kind of two tracks of investigations. There's one by the state, and there's one by the school district. The most serious charges were initially investigated by the state inspector general in conjunction with the Department of Education. And in some cases, for instance, Cayuga, where the educators were charged criminally, those charges were sent to the attorney general, and that's why you saw the criminal charges. And of course, it was just one school that where folks were charged, but we are expecting to see more criminal charges. We don't know the timeline, but we do understand that they're coming.
In the city or across the state, another district across the
state? In the city in particular, there were schools across Pennsylvania that were implicated and have been investigated, and in some cases there's been discipline. But as far as I know, it's just been district-level discipline and not risen to the level of criminal charges.
Dale, when did these allegations first come to light? And I know you and both of you have been covering this issue for a number of years now.
Well, the investigation started pretty much in 2011, although there were hints and suspicions and things before that. But that was when Kristen did reporting at Roosevelt Middle School and at Cayuga about interviewing teachers who were alleging this behavior. And then also the notebook asked for this asked if the state had done a forensic analysis of test score results. And they, in fact, had, and hadn't done anything with them, but sent them to us when we asked. And in it was this report of initially, at least 53 schools, but even more schools, and then they did a further investigation. But that's what launched the state investigations, was the release of this report that showed that states that do standardized testing, which is just about everyone, can pay the testing company to do an analysis of the test booklets and other statistical analyses that would indicate whether the results make sense. And that's the thing that was that stood out so much in Pennsylvania was the erasure analyses, and that's what they did. So the then superintendent, the then Secretary of Education, Ron Tamales, he then ordered erasure analyses of subsequent tests, 2010, 2011, and they ultimately they decided what schools and what districts across the state should be further investigated. And Philadelphia, as Kristen said, had 53 schools and three charter schools that warranted further investigation.
And when we talk about erasures, Kristen, we're talking about people erasing things on these standardized tests.
Absolutely. And the erasure analysis was really quite striking. In some cases, Cayuga, for instance, you would see things like the chances of these erasure patterns. It's the wrong-to-right erasures occurring, or one in a duodecillion, which is
I think 13 zeros.
It's quite stark. So essentially, statistically, this can't happen without some kind of intervention. We hear from reporting and also from the analysis that the state did, they could go back and look at the erasures and in some cases see that it was different handwriting that would bubble in, a right answer.
And so what are the charges or the allegations at Cayuga? Let me go back to you, Kristen, and then we'll get you back in.
The allegations at Cayuga are that there was a culture of cheating. That was the Attorney General's phrase, and that it was perpetuated allegedly by a principal and some others in the building, teachers and an educator who was a teacher at the time at Cayuga and has gone on to be a principal of another school. Things, for instance, allegedly the principal came over the loudspeaker and told children, don't write answers in your test book, write them on scrap paper, and then check with your teacher to make sure it's the right answer. You know, there were kids who were pulled out of class and told to change answers, allegedly. You know, really not subtle ways of cheating if these allegations are true.
Including teachers taking the tests home, I guess, so that they can look at those tests?
Teachers were told to take the test home, allegedly. There was also an instance where the principal and some others allegedly came in and changed answers on the weekend when kids weren't in, or came in very early before anyone was in the building to change answers.
Dale, I mean, it is so brazen, to use Kristen's word. I mean, this is schools are public buildings, and if someone is on the loudspeaker allegedly giving misdirections, if I can say that, it's amazing that it was so out in the open allegedly.
Well, yeah, that was pretty amazing, because generally educators who have done this, and if you look at some of the reports in Atlanta and everything, I mean, they didn't literally broadcast it over the loudspeaker. I mean, they had what they called the erasure parties, and they would, you know, there's strict protocols, or there's supposed to be strict testing protocols around this, and, you know, the test booklets are supposed to be only handled by certain people, and they're supposed to be stored in a certain way, and they're not supposed to be, and the proctors of the test have very strict rules they're supposed to follow in terms of what they can and cannot tell kids, you know, while they're watching them take the test and so on. But in this case, it seems like it was, you know, just, you know, more than just a culture of cheating. It was sort of a defiance of the norm and, you know, way out in the open.
And how many, I know you talked to some whistleblowers, or I guess some teachers that came to you, Kristen, to complain.
I did talk to some educators.
Should we call them whistleblowers?
I think we can call them whistleblowers. Whistleblowers who really sort of spoke in pretty vivid detail about some of this behavior. And I think it's important to note that while there were some teachers who definitely flouted the law and flouted what was wrong, there were some brave teachers who did come forward who said, you know, not on my watch, this isn't going to happen. And, you know, no doubt this is a serious cheating scandal. At one point, one in five district schools was under investigation for cheating. But, you know, the vast majority of educators are honest, and that's important to note. But, you know, something happened in the district that allowed this culture to flourish among, you know, kind of some bad apples.
And I think what people would say happened was the high stakes that are attached to these tests, and how people could lose their jobs, schools could be turned over to charters, in some cases, bonuses were attached to getting better test scores, promotion, certainly public recognition, and that atmosphere of how important these tests were led people to do things because I guess they feared for their jobs. I mean, in Atlanta, some of the people, when you read, you know, that they confessed, their confessions were, you know, the expectations that were put on us were, you know, that it's just impossible to get. Once you saw some schools get these enormous double and triple, you know, well, double-digit increases, it was expected of all schools, if this school can do it, that school can do it. And people didn't really want to probe and say, you know, how do these occur? So people felt under pressure that they had to match these gains, otherwise their jobs could be on the line.
But what we see at Cayuga, for instance, Kristen, is once some of these stricter guidelines, came in for testing, we saw, for instance, in grade 3 math, instead of 63% proficient, it was 30% proficient. Reading 60% proficient down to 26.8% proficient.
Really,
I mean, cut in half,
essentially. Stunning drops that you wouldn't attribute to. You know, in some cases, you may have a class that's very good or very, you know, very, very strong or very weak. And, you know, those kind of numbers you don't see unless there was some kind of outside interference. And to piggyback off what Dale said, Cayuga in particular was a school that was publicly singled out by the superintendent and others as being a model of what to do. you know, the principal was kind of heralded. The district at the time had a designation called Vanguard. These were its best schools that were given some flexibility in curriculum and budgeting. Cayuga was designated a Vanguard school. So, you know, there were definite perks, you know, Cayuga received them.
And was this under then Superintendent Arlene Ackerman?
Yes.
Largely speaking. But, you know, I'm thinking about the children. Going to classes or taking these tests in this particular school that we're talking about, and what the message is to a third or a fourth or a fifth grader taking a test when... Yeah.
I actually interviewed a family, a mom and a little boy at Cayuga, and the boy came home angry from school one day. It was testing time, and he said, you know, Mom, my teacher told me to change the answer, and I didn't like that. It wasn't right. And, you know, these are folks, you know, who live in a tough neighborhood, who don't have a lot of resources, but who, you know, raised their hand and said, this is wrong. And the message to the kids is, you know, you can't do this unless we help you. And that's absolutely inaccurate. These are, you know, smart kids who certainly may need some more resources to you know, get them to where they need to be. But, these are kids who can do the work on their own.
And this child in particular knew that this was wrong as
Absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely. And yes. This was a third grader, I believe,
third
or fourth.
Go ahead, Dale.
Attorney General Kane, when she released the charges, said that she thought one of the most egregious things was getting the children to actually be complicit in some of this cheating because they were told to do things that clearly weren't right, and some of them realized it wasn't right. And, you know, it's cheating them out of an education. It's taking the shortcut. It's increasing the test, and it's sending them a message that they can't do it, you know. So that is really, you know, with the test dominating and with not actually educating the kids, but just focusing on just getting these test score ups, it has these enormous ripples and really hurts the kids ultimately.
And about a minute before the break, go ahead, Kristen.
And kind of sets the kids up for a bad situation because if your record says you got a 90%, you know, right on the test, and then you get to middle school and all of a sudden you have a very low reading level, that's a problem.
Yeah. And Dale, what has been the district response? Or has there been a district response?
It responds
to, well, the Attorney General's indictments here.
Well, they say that they're, you know, fully cooperating with the investigation. They're expecting more. And, you know, they have said that they will do all they can, Superintendent Height, to make sure that this doesn't happen again. But what they are actually doing in terms of training teachers, and I mean they've certainly changed the test protocols. There's much more strict test protocol, you know, on the day of the testing, and as Kristen said, we've seen test scores plummet in most of the places where the cheating was shown. But they've been doing their investigations, and they've been making sure that the test protocols are being put in place.
Well, we are talking about charges, allegations of cheating on state tests, focusing on a school in Philadelphia, raising a whole host of questions about education, about testing, talking with Dale Mezzacapa and Kristen Graham. We want to hear from you. Lines open at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. What do you think should be done and why? Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The National Constitution Center supports WHYY. The National Constitution Center is the museum of We the People, featuring the acclaimed multimedia show Freedom Rising, Signers Hall, and the story of We the People through artifacts, a rare copy of the Constitution, and interactive exhibits. Now through October 19th, Slavery at Jefferson's Monticello, a powerful exhibition that follows six enslaved families who lived and worked at Jefferson's plantation. More at 215-409-6700 or constitutioncenter.org.
How did the guy who produced this...
I hurt myself today.
...also produce this?
Hit me! 99 pounds, but it still ain't one...
Rick Rubin's three decades of hits, from Johnny Cash to Jay-Z. Next time in Studio 360 from PRI and WNYC.
Tonight at 10 on WHYY.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. What drives people into gang violence?
I would say it's a mental illness born of social stigma and isolation. And living in communities that are neglected by the mainstream society.
A California sociologist weighs in next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
this afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowain. Five Philadelphia public school educators have been criminally charged with crimes connected to tampering with school tests. These would be actually statewide tests administered in schools in Philadelphia. And talking again with Dale Mezzacapa, she is the contributing editor at the Philadelphia Public School Notebook, which is a partner with WHYY, and with Kristen Graham. She covers education for the Philadelphia Inquirer and writes the paper's blog called Philly School Files. We have calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. Dale, I know you wanted to expand on this question about what the district is doing about these various allegations.
Right. Well, I mean, in terms of responding to the indictment, obviously they said they were cooperating fully. But in terms of their own investigations and their own willingness to act and really try to ferret out some of these unusual test scores and test score jumps over the years, they have, they've been pretty slow to respond in that way. They started the investigations. I mean, I remember people asking questions. Student groups back in the mid 2000s complaining about cheating in a school that was later shown proved to be one of the tier one schools, Strawberry Mansion. They didn't really look into it. They didn't want to look into it. And now I think they're very concerned about, there's disciplinary proceedings that will proceed against individual teachers and principals in addition to this, the criminal charges. And they've been very slow to, they have to build their case. And there's district disciplinary proceedings. There's state certifications that people can lose their licenses. And those things have proceeding, but there were three
slowly,
principals.
Slowly, you would say, or just
pretty
these
slowly,
take time.
Really, yeah. Very slowly. There were three principals who were terminated in January, and people put two and two together. That's the reason they were terminated. That's when the school district released their findings of their internal investigations, right, about 138 educators, I think, implicated. But if they have been taking disciplinary action since then against other teachers, short of this criminal action, they're not telling us. They're not coming out and saying this person was fired or terminated for this reason. Mm. You can see a list of people every month who are terminated and what their position is, but there's not a reason given. So,
well, and I wonder, Kristen, just said how this adds then to the problems the district has in terms of its financial obligations and its financial debt.
Well, certainly the district's finances kind of overshadow everything at this point. We're talking about a deficit of no less than $216 million dollars for next year, and as much as $440 million, depending on what shape the schools will be in the fall. Obviously the School Reform Commission has no taxing authority, so they need the state and the city to kind of pony up the money. And, to have a cheating scandal cloud the district at this point, definitely makes it harder to ask for money. I mean, certainly there's a sense that current Superintendent Height is, apart from this. There's no, I haven't heard allegations that there have been cheating under his watch, but at the same time, he's playing cleanup on this, and he's, in charge of a system that is very slow to change. It's a big bureaucracy, and so to be talking about, well, our test scores rose this much, but wait, there's an asterisk there. Now, maybe they didn't actually, get that much better. That's tough for the district as it kind of goes begging for funds.
We got an email from someone who said, I was a SDP teacher. I was a teacher at John Welsh Elementary School. During the weeks I gave the PSSA, my class was constantly visited by a senior staff member who would look at what the kids had written, give whole class instruction based on what he'd seen, and pull students to have them rewrite their answers. So,
oh, wow.
What is an SDP teacher?
School District of Philadelphia.
Okay. Okay. Oh, okay. It's exactly what we're talking about. But just another example. And I wonder to both of you whether you get emails and calls and contact from people who were saying things similar to this. Dale?
Lots of comments sometimes on the notebooks. On our site, when we write stories like this, there's often a lot of comments. We will get calls sometimes about people who allege this. One of a classic story that Ben Harold, who used to work at WHYY when he was working with us, wrote about confessions of a cheating teacher, and a woman wanted to tell him why she knew she was doing wrong, but she did it anyway. So, yeah, there are people who will. But I think, you know, people are, you know, since this has become a matter of investigating and criminal charges and all this, I mean, the thing about cheating is that it cannot be proven until somebody admits it, even if the statistical evidence is, you
even
know.
Even if you have all these erasures, for instance.
Right. I mean, it's you know, to charge somebody criminally or to take action against somebody's. So you have to have people say, I witnessed it, I did it.
Well, and I noticed that one of the teachers, or perhaps even the principal, who has been indicted, the attorney described, I guess, this investigation as an inquisition. I'd be curious, Kristen, what the response has been, if you know, of those who have been charged.
You know, certainly they all have attorneys and are not talking. I did talk to the principal of Cayuga when we first reported the allegations, and you know, through her attorney, they've all you know, denied the charges. So certainly they're denying it vigorously. But yeah, I mean, it's clear that the attorney general is making a strong case, and there's a reason that Cayuga came first. I mean, I think they want to show folks that, you know, they're serious about cheating and that there will be criminal penalties. You know, some of the charges are first-degree felonies. We're
serious
talking about
stuff.
Jail time, losing pensions. Those are all very real possibilities for these educators.
And some of the, I think the principal of Cayuga and one other person who refused to cooperate, they got the most serious charges against them. And the other, I guess, three educators who did cooperate, they were not charged with the most serious felony charge. And perjury, but they also were charged with perjury.
But we are talking about a number of probes, each taking, you know, 2, 3, 4 years. And I guess I'm looking at you, Kristen, and then we'll get to our callers, which is this stuff does take time. I guess you have to you have to build a case. You need to have evidence. You need to be able to stand on some firm ground.
Absolutely, these are very serious charges, and in some cases, you're dealing with folks. You know, my understanding from sources is that, you know, at some point, someone isn't willing to talk, and then they have a change of heart and talk, and you know, investigators are still actively collecting information. You know, when the charges about Cayuga came out, the attorney general was very careful to say, if anyone has any information about cheating, please, you know, call this hotline. So this is a case that they're still building.
Let me get looks like Daryl from Overbrook to join us on Radio Times. And Daryl, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes. Good morning. Good morning to your guests.
Morning.
I guess my question is, I've been following this scandal for some time. It's taken exceptionally long. I've never seen written in any of the papers or the notebook how much actual jail time these people are looking at, these five educators. And because I think, quite frankly, I agree with the attorney, this is really more of an inquisition. In Atlanta, the superintendent had $1 million bond or bail placed on her. We didn't do this for Osama bin Laden. I mean, I just find it somewhat disproportionate. But I'd really like to know, how much jail time are they facing?
I'm curious, Daryl, I mean, why do you think of this as an inquisition? We're talking about, you know, an investigation that has gone on for some time, and we're talking also with two reporters here. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Daryl.
When is the first instance of cheating? How far back are we talking? They're looking into the records. How far back?
2008 in Cayuga's case is the earliest.
It's now 2014.
Right, 5 years.
So they're investigating 50-some schools, plus the other schools in the district around the state. The investigation has been going on for over 3 years. Unless you get confessions, and I'm glad one of your guests mentioned this, statistical evidence is not evidence. It's just an anomaly. It's like a lie detector test. It's a very good tool to start an investigation. But unless someone confesses, when you have witnesses, this is impossible to prove.
Well, in fact,
my question is, how long is this going to go on? It's 3 years.
No, fair enough. And I mean, in certain ways, we were talking exactly about what you were saying, Daryl, which is that it's not just enough to have erasures, that you need witnesses and you need confessions. Go ahead, Dale.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's one of the reasons why it's been one way of looking at it has been a painstaking process, try to be fair to everybody. Another way to look at it is that people, you know, are reluctant to move forward. I think they certainly have been moving forward. They divided the schools into three tiers. The state investigated 19 of them. The school district, actually, there's 20-some schools that hasn't even begun investigating, some of which have pretty egregious statistical evidence attached to them. But, yes, I mean, from a legal standpoint, even if you're talking about terminating somebody or taking away their teacher's license or ultimately charging them with a crime, you know, you have to have proof. And confession is the most is the surest way to say this went on. But I think that certainly we've learned that this picture of how this culture has built up in many of these places where this has become somewhat acceptable behavior in lieu of doing the really hard work of teaching the children and making sure that the children are you know, able to do well on these tests.
Daryl, I appreciate the call. Do you want to add to that anything?
I think Daryl covered it.
Okay, fair enough. And we are talking about allegations of cheating in a number of schools here in Philadelphia. We have been focusing on Cayuga Elementary, and five educators there have been criminally charged with tampering with school tests. Talking with Dale Mezzacapa, she's contributing editor at the Philadelphia Public School Notebook, which is a partner with WHYY. Also with us, Kristen Graham. She covers education for the Philadelphia Inquirer and writes for their blog called Philly School Files. And we want to hear from you. What do you think the cheating says about education, about schools, and what can be done to affect and reduce the problem? Give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. Again, you can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. Let me get Jonathan from, looks like, Essington to join us. Jonathan, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, Marty.
Hi.
Thanks for answering the call.
Sure.
And I feel like in this particular instance, this is more, I feel like we should be looking at the cause, what it was that caused these teachers and administrators to feel it was so necessary that they push these kids. Because if you look at it right now, if the school test results suffer, then we're penalizing the schools and, as a result, the children. Shouldn't we be bolstering the schools that are not making the grade as opposed to taking money away from them? And it just seems to me to be a setup for school administrations to try and skew the test scores. So really, it does not surprise me in the least that this has been going on, that it is going on, and that it's going to continue going on.
Well, Jonathan,
No,
I appreciate the call to Radio Times, and I think it should be said we're not talking about every school, every principal, every teacher. We're talking about, well, we don't know exactly the final number, but we're talking about some very specific cases here. But the reasons for it, Kristen, do you want to?
Well, certainly. I mean, we've talked a little bit about this culture of high-stakes testing that, you know, the tests are kind of the be-all and end-all, and while there are other measures that are considered when, you know, schools are being evaluated, that is the primary measure. And there's, you know, argument, and I think I would say, you know, kind of growing argument among some folks in the education community that Philadelphia schools are kind of being set up to fail, that they're, you know, the resources, of course, are going down, and you know, there was a very real threat that if school scores didn't improve, and there still is a very real threat that they could be, you know, turned over to charters or closed. The school district is still, you know, has to close more schools in the coming years. So, you know, it's certainly a pressure cooker.
You want to add to that?
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah. I mean, the district has had a lot of funding problems. They've been starved of funds. They've been asked to do a very difficult job with arguably not enough resources. You know, most of the places where cheating scandals have erupted have been urban districts that are under, you know, that are serve a high number of low-income children, often without the kinds of resources that they think they need, and they should probably have, or compared to their surrounding districts. So there is this, as Kristen said, pressure cooker to perform on this measure. And they can have a whole other show as to whether this measure is, so, you know, is what really should be used for all these high-stakes decisions, because, you know, they are, I mean, one of the things about the testing industry in the United States and in general is that this kind of test, the bubble test, you know, is the easiest and the cheapest to produce and grade and do all this, and it's also the easiest to manipulate. So that's what you're seeing here.
Kristen, I mean, does this say anything about Arlene Ackerman's tenure as superintendent? Do you feel like this reflects something about her years in Philadelphia?
You know, it's of course hard to say because we haven't seen the full scope of the investigation. You know, I have not heard anyone say Arlene Ackerman issued a dictate to cheat on standardized tests. I think more what I've heard is the atmosphere that was created, you know, under Dr. Ackerman, and I think you could argue under other superintendents as well, was get the scores up at all costs. You know, these scores must come up, you know, regardless of the, you know, the outside factors going on with the kids. And so that's what I think you're seeing. Mm. And I remember one of the last times I interviewed Dr. Ackerman before she left under, you know, fairly contentious circumstances. I asked her about cheating, and she said something like, well, you know, it's not like we're talking about one or two instances. It's not like you're talking about cheating parties.
And so referring to Atlanta, I guess.
Referring to Atlanta, certainly. And so, you know, there was some hint of, you know, what she was going to say. Obviously, she's since passed away. But I have not heard anyone say that there was, you know, an issue from her to cheat.
I mean, in Atlanta, Dale. Basically, the Beverly Hall is awaiting trial. I think it's supposed to be in the fall sometime on that very charge that she basically orchestrated it in a very direct way. Beverly Hall, the superintendent in Atlanta at the time. It had never gotten to the point where here, where that was alleged on Ackerman's, but that she did it quite as, you know, if she did at all, and I never spoke to her about it, so I have no idea that it wasn't this, you know. In Atlanta, it's been painted as something that was like orders from the top and do it, you know. I mean, there was a lot of elements here, and, you know, the schools got praised, and the director would certainly get up the test, but whether, you know, there was a personal supervision of cheating parties, which was sort of implied in Atlanta that this was what was expected. I don't think so.
Go ahead.
I do think it's important to note, though, that, you know, when the revelations came with, you know, our stories and the notebook stories in 2011, it was not the first time that allegations had surfaced. You know, Dale talked about Strawberry Mansion in the mid-2000s, but, you know, some of the teachers at Cayuga had raised their hands to various organizations, whether it be the district, and they had investigated and said these allegations are unfounded. You know, we
are unfounded.
Unfounded. We wrote stories, I think, in 2011 or 2012, where the district said we looked at allegations at Cayuga. There was absolutely no cheating. You know, and so kind of viewed what these teachers said was going on with a very skeptical eye.
Mm. And we're almost up on a break here, Dale, but you've been covering the district for, since 1986, so a number of decades now. Is this, have there ever been allegations of cheating at this level?
Well, I think that way back then, the standardized tests were not as high stakes as they are now, and there weren't, I mean, it's really since No Child Left Behind came into, you know, became law in the 2001, that all these high stakes were attached to tests. There were, in the 90s, there was, you know, use of standardized tests, but not with you know, the idea that you're going to turn a school over to a charter if it didn't make the grade on the test.
And that's Dale Mazzacapa, who joins us along with Kristen Graham. We're talking about allegations of cheating in Philadelphia schools. And we have Andy Porter waiting in the wings. And we also have a couple open lines at 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. Call us. We'll be right back.
Does your son or daughter come home drunk or high? Would you like to learn new ways of dealing with their drug or alcohol abuse? The Family Training Program works with parents of children aged 12 to 25 to help them maintain control of their child's drug or alcohol problem. Held in Philadelphia and the Main Line by the Treatment Research Institute, a supporter of WHYY. More on the Family Training Program at 877-I-WORRY-2. That's 877-I-WORRY and the number 2, or online at iamconcerned.org.
On the next Fresh Air, we discuss the growing Chinese presence in Africa, where Chinese firms are building infrastructure, extracting natural resources, and developing new markets. Journalist Howard French says, in the process, more than 1 million Chinese people have permanently settled in African countries. His new book is called China's Second Continent. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
Valuable playtime.
Play is an essential part of being a young human being. It's essential to social life, and it's also essential to physiological and brain development.
When students lose out on recess, education suffers, even if staying off the playground avoids discipline problems in some schools. Next time on The Takeaway from PRI Public Radio International.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. We've been talking about five public school educators in Philadelphia recently charged with crimes involving tampering with school tests. And we've been talking with Kristen Graham. She received a Pulitzer Prize in 2012 for her education reporting for the Philadelphia Inquirer. And with Dale Mezzacapa, contributing editor of the Philadelphia Public School Notebook. Andrew Porter was hired by the Atlanta Education Fund to analyze that city's test scores after district employees were indicted for falsifying answers on Georgia's standardized tests. He's the dean of the Graduate School of Education at the University of Pennsylvania. And Andy Porter, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Nice to be here with you, Marty.
And we've been talking, in fact, doing a bit of comparing and contrasting between Philadelphia, as we understand it today, and what happened in Atlanta. Do you see any similarities there?
Well,
is it too soon to tell?
You know, it depends on what kind of similarities you're looking for. Obviously, there's the similarity that people have been accused of cheating. I'm not. I know that in the Atlanta situation, there was a governor intervention to go in, a special task force to investigate, and people confessed in Atlanta. I don't know whether people in Philadelphia have confessed or not. I say that because you can't prove that somebody cheated by doing the kinds of statistical analyses that, say, I did for Atlanta. You can say that the results are highly unusual and it would take something extraordinary to explain them. One of the most extraordinary possibilities is cheating. Mm-hmm. And like I say, when people went in and investigated, there were confessions. Now, I know Beverly Hall has not. You mentioned her. In that last hour I was
yes.
listening in, and she was the superintendent, as you said, at Atlanta. And, she's, by the way, very ill. They postponed her trial.
Uh-huh.
She's got some kind of cancer, but she has not confessed. And I will say that the analyses I did in Atlanta didn't look like there wasn't systemic, that is to say, across schools and classrooms and grade levels and the like, evidence that of unusual results. So if she did orchestrate it, I'm not saying she didn't. She didn't do it in a way that asked everybody to cheat.
Well,
apparently,
and this inevitably leads to a discussion about, you know, high stakes testing, as it's now called. It used to just be called standardized testing, but now it's high stakes. Does that in any way explain perhaps pressure on principals or even superintendents to bend the rules or sometimes break the rules when it comes to testing?
Absolutely. Now, what I think Atlanta did that was wrong was when you do raise the stakes attached to good performance or bad performance on a student achievement test, you need to put in place safeguards that, I would say, protect people from themselves, you know. it's, we know a lot about how to do that. We know a lot about how to prevent the kind of cheating that went on in Atlanta. It just simply wasn't done. Those safeguards were not put in place.
Well, let me go back to you, Kristen Graham, and talk about the safeguards that have been put in place in Pennsylvania. Can you add to that?
There have definitely been a lot more safeguards put in place. For one thing, now every educator who is involved with administering the PSSAs has to sign an affidavit saying they, you know, won't cheat, won't manipulate the tests in any way. But there's kind of a level of security in the schools where cheating was alleged to have happened in Philadelphia. There's essentially most educators have no contact with the test. No, there are more
under
state monitors.
Under lock and key, in a sense?
Yeah, there are more state monitors, there are more district monitors, and even in schools where no cheating is alleged to have happened, there's tighter security.
Right, which I guess, has that been effective? Do we know, Dale?
Well, I mean, the test scores did go down substantially in most of the schools that were in which cheating was alleged afterwards. So I guess one can say maybe it's been effective. There's been a few curious cases. There was the case of the Wagner Middle School, for instance, where even after the protocols were put in place, the monitors were there and said that they saw some irregularities. And in the 2012 administration of the test was sort of covered. I mean, we've not heard anything further about that. You know, there was actually some schools put on, you know, some schools, there were differing levels of security, I think, and some schools were put on literally like quarantine. You know, they were given really, really stringent. There's a charter school in Chester that's had to put security cameras all over the school because of, alleged cheating. If I can just for a second talk about Beverly Hall for a second, an article in the newspaper there when she was indicted said that, you know, what she did was, and again, you know, she hasn't confessed, but placed unreasonable emphasis on achieving targets, protected and rewarded those who achieved the targets through cheating, terminated principals who failed to achieve the targets, ignored suspicious score gains, and as a result, cheating became more and more prevalent. So it was, you know, that is, you know, this culture from the top and
we'll see where those charges go. Andy Porter, going back to you, and we were talking very briefly about things like the bubble test, these PSSA tests where children, you know, fill in the bubble there. Should we be rethinking, and I know there's a whole movement to push back against some of this standardized testing, but should we be thinking about either better testing or fairer testing or a better way to analyze how children are performing in schools?
We sure should.
And what would that look like?
Well, you know, it could take a lot of different forms. I think the audience, I'll be brief, but I think the audience has probably heard about these Common Core state standards.
Yep.
And the vast majority of states have adopted them. Now, they're becoming politically a little hot, and some states are backing off of their original adoption. Where I'm going, though, is that the U.S. Department of Education funded two multi-state testing consortia. One is called Smarter Balanced, and the other one's called PARC. That's P-A-R-C, all caps. I forget what it stands for. But the bulk of the states have joined one or another of these two consortia, and they piloted their assessments this spring, and they're to be operational next spring. Now, people argue that the Common Core standards are much more challenging standards and demand that students demonstrate that they can reason and problem solve, right, as well as know facts and can do skills like computation and decoding. And so these tests, it's anticipated, will be much more challenging. And they include multiple choice questions, or bubble questions, I guess you're calling them. But they also include extended response format. In the olden days, we called these essay tests. Then they also include a parallel set of tests they call formative assessments, which are almost like they measure how well the students are doing, but they're almost like a mini instructional unit themselves. So these tests, when they were first called for, I thought might really take us to another level. They're not going to take us to the level where I would like. I'll give you two instances of what I'd like to see in our test. The first one is that our current tests suffer from floor and ceiling effects. Students who've really learned a lot can't show what they've learned because the test isn't hard enough. And students who have really learned very little can't show exactly how little they've learned because the tests aren't easy enough. Hmm. And the reason is that we have paper and pencil tests, and you have about an hour or two to assess the student, and everybody gets the same test because it's paper. Now, these new consortia tests will be administered by the computer, and they could be then adaptive. By that, it means that every kid gets a different set of questions, and those questions are pitched at a level of performance that matches where the kid is. They find that out by asking some easy and hard questions in the beginning, and then depending upon whether the student gets them right or wrong, then tailoring the next set of questions in an adaptive way.
Well,
so
I
would love to see that, because it would eliminate floor and ceiling effects, and we can talk more about what the implications of that
sure,
are. Let me just toss out the other thing I'd like to see.
Well, you know what? Hold on one second only, because I'm just be curious what our guests in the studio, I mean, we're now talking about testing. I'm looking at you, Chris, and I'm looking at you, Dale, as well. I mean, is it really, would better testing solve what we have been talking about, or at least be a first couple of steps in solving the problem of cheating?
Well, I think better testing is part of it, but also, you know, you want to look at other measures and look at lots of other measures. You know, you want to look at growth, because there's some kids who are never going to hit the target. And, you know, perhaps you have a particularly challenging population. But if you make, you know, 5 points of growth, that's enormous.
Right.
So it's definitely about more than just the kind of test. But that's an important measure.
Sure.
Yeah, I think that Pennsylvania has signed on to neither one of those consortia, and is continuing with the Keystone test. And I don't know enough to know how the Keystone test compares to what Andy was just talking about. But I think that, you know, I think it's a part of what we believe education is and how we want kids to learn. And it's about measuring, you know, how much kids learn and how much they grow. But it's also about what, you know, what's tested is what's taught. So, you know, there's a way of getting tests that measure what we really want kids to learn, but they're much more complex in the way that Andy was just describing. That's the goal of the Common Core, if not maybe the reality of how it's going to roll out, but is to, you know, there's not just, you know, content knowledge, but there's, and not just basic skills, but much more complex skills. There's, you know, how kids work together. There's all kinds of things that we, you know, would like to create in terms of an educational environment. And, you know, so the way kids are tested and evaluated, and ultimately the way schools are evaluated, the other things about these tests is that they were, you know, the PSSA, the things that people cheated on, they were more about evaluating the school than about evaluating the kid. What testing should be is, okay, we know what they learned, we know what they didn't learn, and now we know what we have to do
to help this child.
Right, but it sort of got lost in all of this, you know, with the types of tests that we have.
All right. And do you think there's some truth to that?
Yeah, I think there is some truth to that. I certainly agree with the proposition that we need better tests. I don't think tests are going to go away. I don't see any sign of it. In fact, there's a great enthusiasm across the country and from the U.S. Department of Education as well about holding teachers and principals accountable. That teachers and principals were not held accountable in No Child Left Behind. It was schools and districts. And if that happens, and the gold standard for that is value added to student mm-hmm. achievement. So what they're going to do is they're going to use a statistical model to say, did this teacher's children this year learn more than you would have predicted from what they had learned in previous years?
Wow.
And so when you get down to the individual teacher level, there's going to be a lot more, I would think, interest on the part of that particular teacher to show a big value added. And I think that will result in cheating unless safeguards are put in place. I will say one other thing.
Sure.
If there's a floor effect or a ceiling effect on that test, you can't estimate value added because, say, did this kid get a lot better? Well, if this kid was about at the top of the test last year, he can't get a lot better and show it on that kind of a test. That's why that adaptive testing would be so helpful.
In the states that have used value added, and some of them are farther ahead than others, you know, you have some teachers, you know, who are like the best teacher of the state not doing well on value added because their kids are so high to begin with. So there's a lot of, you know, it sounds great, but in terms of its actual implementation, how you design it, it's very, very complex.
We have a tweet.
It is, but we know how to do it. We know, we've known for years and years and years how to do top quality adaptive testing.
Mm. But somehow the bureaucracy or inertia or something prevents that from happening. Let me get a tweet from Daniel. He says, what do you make of investigation into cheating at charters, including Walter Palmer and Chester Community? You're nodding your head, Dale.
Well, yeah. I mean, there were four area charters that were snared in this investigation, including Walter Palmer, which now the district is seeking to close, although I don't think that its reasons actually included that. And then there's two other charter schools in the city, and then Chester Community Charter School in Chester, which, as I said before, had these huge drops after the and that investigation was inconclusive, as far as we know.
Mm. What do you think? All that to say that cheating is not just a Philadelphia school district problem. Certainly, it's at charters, it's at Atlanta, it's in Atlanta, and lots of other places,
the state did hire a law firm Pepper Hamilton to investigate not just Philadelphia but several other school districts around the state and charter schools.
Well, we could go on. We have to end our conversation. Andy Porter, thank you for joining us today in Radio Times, even if briefly.
You're very welcome.
And he's dean of the Graduate School of Education at the University of Pennsylvania, the George and Diane Weiss Professor of Education. Dale Mezzacapa, thank you very much for joining us as well. And again, she is contributing editor at the Philadelphia Public School Notebook, a partner with WHYY, celebrating its 20th anniversary this year. Congratulations on that. And Kristen Graham, also with us. Thanks for joining us as well. She covers education for the Philadelphia Inquirer, and she writes their blog called The Philly School Files. And she got a Pulitzer Prize for her education reporting in 2012. Go to WHYY.org/Radio Times and you can find out much more about this program. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Thanks for joining us in this first hour, Radio Times. And do stay with us. We'll be right back.